You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2009, the 16th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Montreal, Canada, from February 8th through February 11th, 2009.
In the following study summaries, Brian Kearney of Gilead Sciences and Robert Gutendorf of Sequoia Pharmaceuticals discuss their studies of new pharmacoenhancers. After the discussion, there will be a series of questions and answers.
Since the discovery of potent HIV protease inhibitors, a common theme of that class has been rapid metabolism and clearance from the bloodstream, requiring twice daily or three times daily dosing. The use of ritonavir as a metabolic inhibitor of protease inhibitors really caused a major advance in protease inhibitor-based therapy by allowing greater exposure with less frequent dosing. That strategy has been dependent on one molecule, ritonavir, that is the intellectual property of Abbott Laboratories. It is only co-formulated with Abbott's protease inhibitor, lopinavir, and has been a bottleneck in efforts to co-formulate medications. There has been a hue and cry and various protests about the availability of only one boosting agent. And also there's been concern at a regulatory level and among clinicians about the effects of a boosting agent such as ritonavir used without a protease inhibitor, let's say used with an integrase inhibitor like elvitegravir. And so we applaud the efforts of Gilead Sciences and Sequoia Pharmaceuticals, who have some exciting news to tell us about inhibitors of the metabolism of protease inhibitors and other agents potentially used in wide therapeutic areas. And we're going to hear about those from Brian Kearney at Gilead Science and from Robert Gutendorf from Sequoia Pharmaceuticals. So I've asked them to give you a brief summary, and I request that we hold questions until each is able to give you a summary, and then we'll open it up for questions. So, Brian?
Good morning. My name is Brian Kearney. I'm Senior Director of Clinical Research at Gilead Sciences, located in Foster City, California. So this morning we presented data on GS-9350, our pharmacoenhancer, that shares with ritonavir mechanism-based inhibition of cytochrome P450, which is really critical in terms of being able to administer a low dose as infrequently as once a day to provide not only boosting of bioavailability, but slowing of systemic clearance to allow for optimal pharmacokinetics of the drugs that we choose to boost. And as John mentioned, the anti-protease activity that molecule has does raise certain questions about its ability to select resistance even at a low boosting dose. And so in our development program, we specifically sought to have the mechanism-based inhibition that ritonavir has and remove the anti-HIV activity. And we were able to successfully do that. And then there were other factors that we considered in ultimately choosing GS-9350, and these included, broadly speaking, improvements in other areas of its DMPK profile, so drug metabolism and pharmacokinetics. That includes more specific inhibition of cytochrome P453A relative to competitive inhibition of other enzymes. The 2C family and 2D6 are also inhibited by ritonavir. And then also, ritonavir has a certain amount of liability in terms of being able to induce metabolism, so whereas it boosts effectively in the background, it can cause induction. And so we've removed the induction liability as well by removing its activity in terms of activation of nuclear receptors. And that induces a number of drug metabolizing enzymes as well as drug transporters. Other aspects that we focused on included reduced effects on adipocytes in vitro. And we focused on this in particular because elevations in triglycerides and cholesterol, as well as insulin resistance, is sometimes seen in patients receiving boosted regimens. And we were able to show that GS-9350 has less effects in vitro. And then at the last and one of the key aspects of selection of GS-9350 was its high aqueous solubility. What that really allows us to do is formulate it as a solid dosage form. and also allows for a co-formulation potential. And so when all those attributes were met, we moved into the clinic and conducted two clinical studies. The first clinical study was really safety and tolerability. It was a single and multiple dose study, and we looked to also establish proof of concept in terms of its ability to boost CYP3A substrates. And in our study, we chose to use the validated probe midazolam. And in that study, we showed that GS9350 was able to reduce metabolism of midazolam, this 3A substrate, to the same extent that ritonavir is able to do at its boosting doses. So after that proof of concept was met, then we moved into a co-formulation study where we co-formulated GS9350 with our integrase inhibitor, L-vitegravir, as well as tenofovir and FTC. And the long and short of that story was, as the quad formulation, GS9350 at 150 milligrams co-formulated with L-vitegravir, tenofovir, and FTC, reached the desirable concentrations that we had set out to reach. And based on those data, we'll move forward into phase two with this quad tablet and a head-to-head study versus a tripla in treatment-naive patients. And our intent is to start that study in the second quarter of this year. We're also in the process of completing a study of the standalone GS9350 tablet to boost atazanavir. And it's really a dose-finding study to see what dose is necessary to boost atazanavir, similar to what ritonavir does in the boosted state. And when those data come through, we plan to conduct a head-to-head study of GS9350 standalone tablet to ritonavir, to boost atazanavir, both of those regimens with Truvada, also in treatment-naive patients. And our goal is, pending favorable data on that PK study, to also start that phase two study in the second quarter of this year.
Thank you. Robert?
My name is Robert Gutendorf from Sequoia Pharmaceuticals. I head up the Pharmacology and Experimental Therapeutics group there, and I'm very happy to have this opportunity to talk with you about our PKE program. As described, we are seeking to come up with an alternative to ritonavir as a booster in HIV therapy, particularly with PIs, but also with potential application to other classes of antiretrovirals and perhaps beyond. We set out to try to address the limitations that ritonavir has, including its propensity to elevate serum lipids, its protease inhibitory activity, which could be associated, and there is a risk of association with generating protease-resistant mutants, and also its GI intolerability. And we succeeded in those goals in coming up with our lead compound, SPI-452. And it's probably worth mentioning that if you aren't familiar with us at Sequoia Pharmaceuticals, we are a small young company of only about 30 people, but we do have a wealth of talent and experience at our disposal within the company, starting with our founder and CSO, Dr. John Erickson, with whom many of you are probably already familiar, who is here in the audience. Beyond that, we have breadth of experience and depth of experience across all stages of drug discovery and development and many different therapeutic areas, and that allowed us to take this project from the initial inception of the PKE program to the full proof of concept demonstration in the clinic within only about 3 years. And as I mentioned, SPI-452 did have the profile that we were looking for in a lead candidate. In vitro and in vivo in animal studies, preclinically, it demonstrated itself to be a very potent PK enhancer, and it was on par with ritonavir. Our goal was to come up with something that was at least as good a booster as ritonavir, but which didn't have as many of the adverse aspects of the profile that ritonavir has. And it showed that preclinically. And with that, we went into our clinical studies, and we've conducted two so far, a single rising dose tolerance and a multiple rising dose tolerance, in which we showed that indeed SPI-452 does have a very safe and tolerable profile. It does not have any substantial GI side effects, and it, at least in the multiple dose study, showed no statistically significant differences in triglycerides and LDL compared to placebo. And in addition to that, we also built into each of these two studies an arm that would evaluate the ability of SPI-452 to enhance directed potential partner PI drugs, sequinavir in the first study, atazanavir and darunavir in the second study. And the boosting that we saw for each of these compounds was quite remarkable and showed us beyond a shadow of a doubt that we were, in fact, hitting our molecular target and enhancing these PIs as we had hoped to do. These are on a par with ritonavir based on literature data. So with that, we believe that SPI-452 has great potential. We see it as potentially being developed as a standalone agent or as a fixed-dose combination. And it has potential applications, not only within HIV as a PI booster, but also in HIV for other types of classes of antiretrovirals. In HCV, for some of the development compounds that are out there right now, it would be a very good adjunct for that. And in addition to that, there are also opportunities for either 452 or our general PKE platform to be applied outside of the antiviral space.
Question to the two companies. Would you be nicer than Abbott and license your compound to other companies so that they can manufacture a combo pill?
So I'd say we're currently doing work with atazanavir and are engaging in conversations with other companies to conduct pharmacokinetic studies to see if our drugs can work together. And I think we've shown with our collaboration with BMS that we're more than willing to work with other companies.
Dr. Gundorf,
would you? And thank you. Yeah, I would echo that. We as well are looking at the possibilities of fixed dose combinations with this compound, and are in discussions with a number of potential large pharma partners to look at directed fixed dose combinations for development.
The single event of the grade 3 event of discoordination. Could you define discoordination for us and what that means?
This is a subject in our study who came to the investigator in the study and saying that she felt like she was having a hard time engaging in juggling, which was one of the things she did to pass the time when she was in the clinic, and felt like this impaired her ability to do that. And per the toxicity grading criteria, this was considered discoordination, and it was a grade 3 event per her report, and she was discontinued from the study because we had predefined stopping rules. Anybody who had a grade 3 adverse event would be discontinued.
Okay, thank you. And also, do you have plans to do a parallel track for releasing this as a booster on its own, or is it only in co-formulation? Or
no, we intend to bring forward a standalone tablet of GS-9350 as well as the co-formulation.
And would that be around the same time? Or
yes.
Question for Robert. I wish discoordination were my most serious problem. But after 20 years in this field, I am very suspicious of the phrase safe and well tolerated. Could you run down the side effect profile of your enhancer? What were the most common side effects?
Sure. Yeah. And I probably should qualify that if I didn't, as generally safe and well tolerated. I agree there is no drug out there that is absolutely safe, but it's all in relative terms. In the single-dose study, the predominant adverse events were there was 4 episodes of headache and 4 episodes of pharyngitis, not strep pharyngitis, but just general sore throat. Again, these are fairly typical in this type of a study, particularly as people are being withdrawn from caffeine for the study and that sort of thing. Headaches tend to be pretty prevalent. In the second study, the multiple-dose study, there were an additional number of headaches. And again, remember, this was over 15 days of dosing with 452, plus a couple extra days for the PI dosing before and during and after the SPF 452. So all told, with the number of subjects we had, you know, over 1,000 dosing events, during which time there was about 35 reports of headache in 17 people. There was 11 individuals reported nausea or emesis, a total of 13 times among those 11. And it was interesting that a majority of those tended to occur right before a subsequent dose was given. And it tended to be related to the fact that that's when they were getting their breakfast. And as it turns out, I guess not everybody is as big a fan of French toast as I am, because that was tended to be one of the prevalent findings and the timing of that finding. And there was a few scattered episodes of loose stools as well.
Thank you. What was the maximum duration of dosing in your studies?
Of the 452?
Yes.
That was 15 days.
What is known, if anything, about the interactions of your compounds with other drug classes that are metabolized by the CYP3A4 isoenzymes, like statins and macrolides and rifamycins?
We have conducted several drug-drug interaction studies in vitro, and insofar as we are intending to modulate CYP3A activity, we anticipate that there will be a fair number of drug-drug interaction studies that we'll have to elucidate in the clinic. And obviously in the HIV area, that's a risk-benefit decision that's pretty well accepted at this point in time. And We will evaluate those in further studies. Our next study to be done will be a sip cocktail study, which will evaluate the direct effects of 452 on specific sip isoforms. And that will help guide us, along with additional in vitro studies, on the specific types of drug-drug interaction studies that we'll have to do to support our label.
Yeah, so we would expect to have the same type of 3A-mediated interactions with drugs that are metabolized by that pathway. We also intend to do these cocktail studies, which are now recommended by guidance, to look at the different specific isoforms.
In your talk, you said that there was a propensity to enhance the concentration at the end of the dosing interval. This seems kind of unique, and what kind of implications would that have?
Well, the main advantage of that would be that you can enhance the levels and maintain the duration of the drug above its targeted levels, which, as you know, in order to maintain efficacy, you have to keep levels above this certain target level through the duration of the dosing period. So an ability to it has a predilection for doing that as opposed to to enhancing the entire profile. So by, in a sense, almost like a hinge, you know, if we increase the back end without doing much to the front end, then we're increasing the extent of the efficacy window and not at the same time commensurately increasing the Cmax, which would lead to potential additional side effects.
You had indicated there's a trial starting in the second quarter of this year. My assumption is that you talked with the FDA and this is headed towards approval. Given that this drug is not a drug per se, it's a little different than most others. What are they going to be looking for in terms of duration, size of trial duration? What are you going to need to prove to them in order to get approval for this compound?
So to answer the first part of your question, our intent is to start two phase 2 studies in treatment-naive patients in the second quarter. One will be with the quad tablet compared to a tripla. And the second, pending the pharmacokinetic data boosting atazanavir, is a study of 9350 versus ritonavir to boost atazanavir, each of those combinations with Truvada, also in treatment-naive patients. And so we have had discussions with the FDA and plan to move forward with that in the United States in the second quarter. Your second question, it is a new chemical entity and it is a drug by definition, and therefore it would be expected to have the same type of data as if you were developing a new antiviral. So when we worked with the agency, and the expectation is that we will provide a safety database, and as was mentioned by Dr. Kim Struva, who was one of the moderators of the session from FDA, we would seek to comply with that expectation that we would have a sufficient number of subjects studied for over a year. It tends to be in excess of 500 subjects. And a larger number of subjects studied for a shorter period of time. And so our development program is based on that plan.
Just to hone in on this just a little bit, will it be sufficient to show that there is safety and equivalent exposure to L-Vitegravir as to that would be achieved with ritonavir boosting, or do you have to show efficacy as a quad-containing tablet that you would for any new first-line therapy?
So our intent is to show a lot of the numbers, and when you're talking about specific the numbers in terms of required for approval, goes into discussions about the size of the safety database, characterizing the safety of the molecule. And as you probably all know, that can be generated from multiple different clinical studies and different combinations of drugs. And so that would be the case here as well. One aspect of the safety database will be from phase 3 studies of the quad compared to different what we would consider standard of care regimens, one being a tripla. So you don't have, it's not that you have to show efficacy against specific other combinations. What is the definition of efficacy? It'll be defined by the individual phase 3 studies, which will be designed in concert with the regulators. And then in totality, those different endpoints, once met hopefully, then the overall safety database needs to be of a certain size.
GI symptoms are a big concern of people taking ritonavir, especially diarrhea. In your proof of concept study, Brian, when comparing different doses of the compound with ritonavir and placebo, did you collect any data on GI symptoms? Is there any difference?
So the overall rates of adverse events in those studies were low from single doses to multiple doses. There was no evidence of any dose dependence between 50, 100, and 200 milligrams in those studies. So not a lot of GI adverse events.
I'm wondering if you can maybe say a little bit about what your plans are to combine your drug or use it with bosepravir for hepatitis C. And I guess, Brian, if you're doing anything like that, if Gilead's also planning anything, and if there are other disease models that where pharmaco-enhancement using this kind of thing might be useful.
Well, at this point, we've shown proof of concept that we are able to enhance the levels of bosepravir in vitro, and we are conducting some animal studies now to help confirm that. Our ability to co-administer that with bosepravir is complicated a bit by the fact that it is also an NCE, and in order to do that, we would have to have some sort of collaboration and probably a new IND in collaboration with the developers of bosepravir. However, we do look at that as a very good opportunity, as well as for other PIs in the HCV realm and some other HCV compounds as well. Beyond the antiviral space, as I mentioned, our PKE platform is actually fairly broad-reaching. We have additional compounds in the pipeline that could come in as either standalone or fixed-dose combinations that have improved on some of the attributes of SPF-452, which could be used for HIV, HCV, or elsewhere. And in addition to that, we're also developing additionally selective PKEs for other CYP isoforms that may be able to be applied outside of the HIV space and antiviral space in general.
Our plans are most developed for the HIV program right now, but we are looking at opportunities in other therapeutic areas, including HCV.
Thank you very much.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from CROI 2009. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2009.